Zillow's flip failure leads to a fire sale. The yields are inverting ahead of the Fed's taper announcement and the manufacturing sector's cooling off. All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today because the big story is the housing market is set up to crash, and we're seeing it with Zillow of all places. Plus, somewhere where people go to find homes and sell homes somehow now is at the forefront of what could be the next housing crash. And people often ask if they haven't been through a bear market in real estate or stocks or anything, you know, how does this happen? Well, it starts out in the smallest way first, and then it multiplies rapidly. Let's take you to the story, because Zillow was caught holding the bag as 93% of Phoenix flipping portfolio listed as loss. And you say, well, wait a minute, I don't understand what's going on here. Well, I'll just share this with you. Zillow decided it would get into the house flipping game because it had a lot of data to work with. It knew where the buyers were at and knew where the sellers were at. And it said, hey, maybe we can make some money here. And so they borrowed a whole lot of money, started buying homes. Check this out. The insider's team collected publicly available data from Zillow-owned listings in those cities and compared the purchase prices of homes to their most recent asking prices. Some of the markets showed even starker losses. Of the 208 homes that Zillow owns in Phoenix, for instance, which notably is a very hot market for housing, 93% are now listed for less than what it paid for the homes. In Dallas, where Zillow owns 168 homes, roughly 81% of its properties are listed for less than what the company originally paid. What a huge mistake. Now, Zillow's iBuyer division, also known as Zillow Offers, uses artificial, we'll have to say, quote-unquote intelligence to set target prices for homes and let sellers receive an almost immediate offer for their property. That's pretty cool. Almost entirely online. And now it appears that Zillow's AI-driven wager was dead wrong, or maybe just likes losing money. So here you can see Insider reviewed the homes, and out of the 224 homes, 208, 93% were priced below what they paid. And when they looked at the 5,661 homes across 25 metropolitan areas from Austin to Tucson since the beginning of 2021, Zillow announced on October 17th that it would stop buying homes. So it was going on just a buying spree and said, hey, we're done buying homes for the remainder of 2021. And why? Because they said an operational backlog for renovations and closing that blamed on the labor supply constrained economy inside a competitive real estate market. So I want, here's what I want you to think about. Because if you've been in the flipping business, or you've, you know, moved property before, what you're seeing is Zillow is buying property that they perceive as undervalued a little bit. So they get the seller to accept an offer now that the seller is happy to accept. They come in, hire independent contractors. So these are not Zillow employees. So they've got to go out to the market, find what work needs to be done in that home, get someone to do all the work, pay them, and then relist it, and after all their expenses, at a higher price. Well, it didn't work out very well for them so far. Here you can see what's more is while most of the Zillow sales were first listed at more than they paid, which is a good thing to start with, eventually receiving price cuts that brought them into the red, 36.5% of properties were listed for less than the company first paid. Just 16 homes were above the price. And if you can see here, Zillow is having issues clearing out its existing inventory. And if it sold all of its Phoenix homes right now at their current prices, it would $6.3 million, an average loss of nearly $29,000 per home. Now, if you're in the market of flipping homes, that's not how you want to do it, because you're going to lose a ton of money real fast. And Zillow is in that situation. Now, remember, they borrowed money to do this. So they still have that bond to pay. And this is not a good sign. Here from Insider, Zillow could be facing a potential demand issue and is thus attempting to clear inventory before trends worsen. So wait a minute, the trend's going to get worse? A Bank of America research report stated on Thursday, referring to the company's recent iBuying pause. And so that brings us to that question, and where we started out is, are we about to see the housing market crash? Are we getting close to that point? Well, let's look at the data, because the data is what really matters here. You know, a lot of people will say, well, the housing market's correlated to interest rates. All right. Well, here's the median sales price of homes sold in the United States in blue. You see, it goes up, and 30 fixed 30-year fixed rate mortgages in red. Here you can see prices went down a little bit, interest rates were going down. Prices went down a bit, interest rates were going down. Prices went down, interest rates briefly went up, but overall were trending down. Prices actually started going down a little bit, interest rates went up and then came way down. So it's not interest rates. Interest rates isn't the function here. So what could it be? Is it loans? Well, no, because here we have total volume of real estate loans at all commercial banks in red. And you can see there's no relationship there at all. None. So what could it be? Is it crude oil? We talked about crude oil being an issue, maybe energy prices too high, perhaps food prices too high, and then you combine that with home prices being too high and you have a perfect recipe for failure. Well, you can see here, crude oil prices spiking, bringing home prices down. Here you can see home prices starting to slow a little bit. I mean, I'm being generous with that statement, and it wasn't until crude oil prices fall that home prices continue. Crude oil prices go back up, and now all of a sudden home prices stall until crude oil prices go down. So with crude oil prices rising, it would suggest that perhaps that we're going to see another slowdown or correction in the housing market, but maybe that's not it either. And to that, we go to real disposable income. So what is real? Inflation adjusted disposable personal income. And here you can see in red, when disposable personal income is rising faster than home prices, then people can obviously afford homes and prices rise. And then when you see here, just this little spot where home prices get above real disposable personal income, home prices come right back down and get back on trend with that. And here we go into the housing bubble, where you see prices going way above where real disposable income is at. And if you look back, you can start to see that borrowing was really going, taking off here. So people were clearly borrowing because they couldn't really afford what they were buying. And sure enough, what happens is not only do incomes flatten out during the recession, but home prices massively go down. Then you see incomes are trending back up, home prices finally get back in line with that, and then all of a sudden home prices take off again, and incomes are rising, but still not enough to support those higher prices. And then what happens? Home prices start to come down, looks like we're seeing peak of the market, and then what happens? The pandemic hits, and government transfers shoot real personal disposable income up. And there you go, that drives prices up. But now what's happening is incomes are coming back down almost right at trend level. And what does that suggest to you, my friends, is that perhaps we're very close to seeing a peak in the housing market because people cannot afford them. And that's where we go to the next slide here, because we've already known this is coming. And here's this great, great slide I pulled off of Twitter, and you can see home buyer sentiment. When it goes down, you obviously see stock prices come down, but you see home buying sentiment at super low levels, and you start to go look at the math. You see prices are way up here and affordability is way down here. Well, it makes perfect sense that when home buyer sentiment is crashing, that so too will consumer sentiment, the equity market, and eventually the housing market as well. So let's talk about what's going on with the bond market, because many of you were asking is, hey, what's the deal with 20-year yields being higher than 30-year yields? And of course, we on Wednesday, keep in mind, we've got the FOMC press conference coming up. The Fed's largely expected to taper. Now, some people have suggested that if the Fed doesn't taper, that yields are going to go up, which almost makes me wonder if they understand that the Fed is buying bonds here. But anyways, so we'll move on from that for a second. But many of you ask is what is driving this inversion and what does it mean? Well, it means that there's a policy mistake coming. So let me show you what happens here. So this is a 20-30 spread. And what that means is you take 30-year yields and you strap 20 and it goes negative. And what all that simply means is that 20-year yields are higher than 30-year. And we know that. Now, why is that a problem? Well, here is what's called the standard yield curves, where you take 10-year treasury yields and you subtract 2-year treasury yields. And you can see these start to invert right before you get a recession. Now, they're not anywhere close to an inversion, but 20 years are. This 20s, 30s is, and we haven't had 20-year treasury bonds for a while, so we don't have a lot of data on it, but it tells you there's a policy mistake coming. And what is the obvious policy mistake is the Fed is going to reduce its accommodative policy as the economy is slowing down. Now, we looked at that last week when we had the GDP data, and we saw that the quarter-on-quarter dropped to 2%, and we can already forecast with some reasonable accuracy that the fourth quarter is likely to be a goose egg, potentially even negative, because what are we seeing? Imports rapidly outpacing exports here. So what does this all mean? Is the bond market is starting to tell the Fed that you're about to make a gigantic mistake. And so let's take a look at this slide here, because we're going to talk about the Purchasing Managers Index in a bit. But when you see the prices paid start to peak, and this is a fantastic slide because it goes back to the 80s, you see a peak in yields and they go down, they trend down. So if you want to look at something and say, how do I know that the interest rates are high and unlikely to go higher? Because the prices paid of the ISM PMI tells you that. This time we're seeing yields rise a little bit, but we're still seeing overall the kind of the yields peaking out here and going down. Now remember, yields peaked back on the third year in March of this year. And part of the reason we're seeing some of this fight against the bond market is everyone's betting against this. And we've looked at the slide where we see the most pessimistic outlook for bonds in the history of fund manager survey. And we looked at the actual data and we found out, hey, they're actually betting against the bond market. And sure enough, this is their biggest, most pessimistic outlook for the bond market in the history of the survey. And then we can go and look at Hedgeopia, who looks at the net speculative positioning in the futures market. And what do we see on the 10-year treasury note? What maybe one of the biggest one-week moves from net long to net short, just as yields look to be making another peak here and about to head lower. So all of a sudden, everyone's now going in to this FOMC press conference and betting big against the bond market. And you can see it on the 30-year. There's still, you say, well, this isn't as big as it was then. No, but it's still a fairly big bet against the bond market. And that tells us the likely direction for yields is to go lower, because they're not just a function of speculative positioning. They're not just a function of what's going on with fund managers. It's an economic issue. When the economy is slowing, when the financial conditions are tightening, interest rates go down, because you need lower interest rates to spur lending growth to create new dollars in the financial system. So when you start looking at the economy and you want to know what is a good proxy for it, it's the bond market. It tells you everything. So the fact that all these people are pessimistic about it and they're all betting against it in some way or another, and yet yields are still not going up, it just tells you what's going on with the economy. But the Fed may be forced to taper because, well, the Treasury is going to start tapering. Let's take a look at this. Treasury's tapering seen outpacing the Fed with $1 trillion in cuts. And here you go, the Jefferies team. This was expected, that we haven't gotten an official announcement yet, that the Treasury is going to reduce its issuance in notes and bonds and increase its issuance of bills, which it needs to do. But you can see a reduction in $2 billion per month for 2-, 3-, and 5-year notes, $3 billion per month in 7-year notes, $3 billion for 10 and 30, and $4 billion for 20-year. So they're going to significantly reduce issuance on the intermediate long end of the curve to focus on more bills, because we have this massive reverse repo problem still. We have all this cash that the Fed is backstopping. And one thing I want to challenge you to be thinking about going into Wednesday is not just if the Fed tapers, but what the Fed needs to do is get all of this cash that is supporting off back into the financial system. So will the Fed also, in addition to tapering its balance sheet, taper the amount of reverse repo that is willing to offer and force people back into treasury bills? That is the question that we need to answer. But we'll find out Wednesday what the Fed's thoughts on that. But in the meantime, we're also seeing the manufacturing sector start to cool. And here we go to the Purchasing Managers Index from the ISM, slowed to 60.8, which is still by itself a good number, showing expansion in the manufacturing sector, just at a slower pace. And for the October series, and here we can see the Business Survey Committee panelists reported that their companies and suppliers continue to deal with an unprecedented number of hurdles to meet increasing demand. all segments. So mind you, they're focused on increasing demand. Now we'll see how long that lasts when you, you know, we'll go back to, hey, this real personal disposable income number is going down. Where do you think demand is going to go with it? Do you think, you know, this is what frustrates me. People tell me, oh, demand's going to go way up. As people have less money, demand is going to go up. Anyways, all segments of the manufacturing economy are impacted by record long raw material lead times, continued shortage of critical materials, rising commodity prices, and difficulties in transporting products. Global pandemic-related issues, worker absenteeism, short-term shutdowns due to shortages, difficulties in filling positions, and overseas supply chain problems continue to limit manufacturing growth potential, even though it's still expanding. However, panel sentiment remains strongly optimistic, with four positive growth comments for every cautious comments. They're focused on supply chain issues in order to respond to the ongoing high levels of demand. Well, and we'll see how long, again, how long that will last. So we see the PMI dipped a little bit from September into October. New orders slowed. Now, there's a lot of rumors that people are pointing out multiple orders, not knowing where their orders are going to get filled. But we'll see a slowdown, a little slowdown in new orders. Production was unchanged. Employment was up a little bit. So think about as we go into the non-farm payroll report on Friday that we should see, you know, a bit of improvement in manufacturing hiring, which hasn't been that strong. So a 50 is unchanged, a 52 is just a slight increase in the number, the rate of hiring. Supplier deliveries increasing, inventories increasing, customer inventories unchanged, still contracting at, or contracting at the same rate. Prices paid is, we're gonna look at this, is almost back near its high, which is interesting because the bond market's totally not buying into that. Backlog of orders still building, and export new orders unchanged, still expanding at about the same rate. So what does all that translate to is you look at this red line, this is prices paid. And why does that matter? Because back in March of 2021, the bond market called this bluff. It kept going up. And when you see prices paid peak, you tend to see yields peak. Well, yields are saying, nah, don't buy into this. And you're seeing this little move higher in prices paid. We saw a little move higher in yields. And what did we expect for both of them? To be rejected. And you can see the report on business, new orders in blue heading lower. And as new orders go down, well, prices go down too. And this is something people often struggle with, is I can raise prices as a manufacturer as long as I have strong demand. But if my demand goes down, because my new orders are going down, what is the likely path of my pricing? It's going to slow the rate of growth, maybe go down. It's those things are going to happen. And you see that in this chart right here, that new orders is, are telling us the supplier delivery problems are going to at some point go away, and prices paid are going to cool off in a big way. And with this slide here, we've got the US cycle lead index, which is phenomenal, versus the ISM new orders. And the US cycle lead, this was from Staff Capital, is suggesting that new orders are indeed heading down. Well, if that is the case, if new orders are heading down, then prices paid are heading down, and the overall growth of the manufacturing sector, my friends, is also heading down. And that all just adds to the fuel of the fire that started now with Zillow having his fire sale, suggesting that how the housing market is indeed peaking, is likely to come crashing down. And you now know why. It has everything to do with inflation adjusted personal income. And with that, we'll wrap up today's show. Thanks for all of you for being fans. Thanks for the likes. Thanks for the subscribes. Of course, we'll be back on Wednesday to see what the Fed actually does. Of course, we'll expect a taper since it's now a foregone conclusion by the markets. The Fed never wants to disappoint, but will they change the overnight reverse repo levels? That's the question that I have. I'll see you back on Wednesday. I'm Steve Van Meter. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor or other advice. This material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell security, financial instrument, or participate in a particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter on personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.